Blog Talk Radio.
Television is a goddamn amusement park. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. So if you want the truth, go to God. Go to your gurus. Go to yourselves. Because that's the only place you're ever going to find any real truth. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of a sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off.
Come on.
All the humanity. All the...
Mary had a little lamb, it was white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool.
I never once said, na-da-da.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
And welcome back. 1 minute after the hour, right here. Reese on the radio on blogtalkradio.com. Plenty in store for you today. I got plenty of things to talk about on this Therapy Thursday. That's right. It's June 7th, 2012.
Today's Wednesday.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Is today Wednesday?
Yes.
No, it's not. It's Thursday.
It's Thursday. Why would you do that to me? Why would you do that? Why would
Because I
that?
Knew that you would question yourself.
I knew you would second guess yourself. I know. Yeah, so you're taking advantage of knowing that I would second guess myself?
Yes, because you frequently
and you fell for it.
The days and the days.
Yeah, obviously I fell for it. You know what?
Times you get
I'm
pretty
losing
right.
My own confidence here on Reese on the Radio. I'm
no,
losing
no, no.
it.
They say that, you know the end of the days are coming when we kind of forget what day we're in.
Yeah, well, that's probably what the deal is.
What is it?
2012.
The end of days is coming.
JC, get off of it. The end
you're
of the days
You're excused. It's 2012.
Coming.
Yeah,
what?
Well, he says I'm excused. It's 2012. It's the year that the world's going to end, according to the
no,
calendar.
No, it's the year that the world, at the beginning to the end of the world will
no,
start
I don't,
to take
whatever.
Place.
Bottom line is... Is that it's Thursday? It's Therapy Thursday right here on Reese on the Radio on BlogTalkRadio.com.
Well, I'm going to tell you guys up front. If you're going to buy me anything for my birthday, get me some weights. I need some real heavy weights.
Please,
what do you need real heavy weights for, JC?
Well, because they say that the world's gravity is going to flip and we're just going to all float off into space and die. I need something to weigh me down.
No, that is not what they're saying.
And I hope they're not saying it, but...
They're saying that things are going to start happening like eruptions.
Tidal waves.
You know, crazy...
Mass hysteria.
Yeah. Things like that. Catastrophic weather events.
Right, all that other stuff.
And so on and so on.
Well,
and it'll
probably be one of the best birthdays I've ever had.
What's your birthday?
December 22nd.
Well, listen up.
Is it really? Well, isn't it 12/21?
Yeah,
no,
it's
12/22.
So your birthday is the day after.
Of course, in my calendar, I think it was 12/21. But that's beside the point. I'm good today, and I'm having a blast.
Yeah.
Well, just think, on 12/22, when you're still here, you'll be like a newborn baby.
Yeah.
With two big weights.
Anyway, of course, I'm joined by Mary White, Buggin, and JC, the producer. We got plenty of stuff going on today, plenty of news, plenty of events. We've got a guest on the show tonight who's going to be on at 9 o'clock. His name is Frank Cipolla, or I hope it's not Cipolla, and I'm pronouncing it wrong.
I'm pretty sure it's Cipolla.
It should be Cipolla, Frank Cipolla. He worked in New York on Channel 9 News. Now, if you're from New York and you know the New York area, there are people like Brenda Blackman over there. I believe that Frank Field, who is the weatherman, used to be there before he retired. And he's written a book, that's titled It Shocked Even Us, and more crazy stories covering local news. It's a behind-the-scenes look at all the funny stories from Frank's 30 years of covering news in the New York metropolitan area. And he's worked with the likes of Don Imus, Howard Stern, Alan Colmes of Fox, Fox News, Roland Smith, as I aforementioned, and Dr. Frank Field, as I also mentioned. And it's a book talking about all of that. And he is going to discuss with us about some of the headlines that have not made headlines, so to speak. I've got a list of things that I'm going to ask him about his 30 years in news broadcasting and ask him about the climate of news then, today, whether or not there are things that are still happening then that that may be happening now. As a lot of people know, in the news media, there's this unwritten sort of rule where they say that if it bleeds, it leads. We'll talk to him about that, about whether or not that's still the template of the news media, or if he believes that based upon his 30 years and his research. We'll talk about that as well. Of course, I'm going to ask him some questions about some stories that should have been headline news, like the Catholic Church lawsuit, which is a huge story that major media isn't covering. Scott Walker, who just won the recall election on Tuesday in Wisconsin, the fact that he has been receiving online death threats and why that hasn't been covered. Live Action, which is the conservative group that has been covering this gender-specific abortion scandal. We'll talk about Fast and Furious as well, and we'll talk about Barack Obama and the new revelations about his membership at a group called the New Party, which is a socialist group that it has now been revealed that he was a member of in the mid-90s, and how in 2008 the Obama campaign pretty much discounted it on a website that they put out, which was called, let me get the exact name of it, it was Fight the Smears. It was a Fight the Smears website that the Obama campaign put up back in 2008, talking about some of the stories, and in fact, group that was called the New Party in that particular story. So we'll get into all of that. Let me get into Chris Rock. Chris Rock said something that needs to be investigated. And I'm not talking about it needs to be investigated by the news or investigated by the police or prosecutors. It needs to be investigated for, as the hyperbole that it is. Now, I've often said on this show, in my personal life, I've said this in conversations about politics, about liberals. Liberals are the racists. They pretty much see everything through the scope of racism. Everything is attributed to race when it comes to liberals, Democrats, all the those in the like. It's what it is that they do. It's who it is that they are. Everything hinges on race. Now, I'm going to play a clip. This is Chris Rock talking to Ann Coulter on the Today Show. And he's, of course, there promoting his new movie, Madagascar 3. And Madagascar 3 is coming out, I guess, within the next coming weeks. It's supposed to be a summer blockbuster film. The other two movies did impressively well, which I'm sure. I didn't see any of them, or at least I don't believe that I did because I don't remember them. But in talking about his character being a zebra, if you know his character, he's asked by Ann Coulter of the Today Show whether or not he lobbied to be a different character in the film other than the zebra. And he goes off in a tear about President Obama. Now, there are several things that I want you to pay attention to. It's what he says, that's most important, what he says. Two, I need you to pay attention to the people in the background. These are producers. This is not a live audience. These are producers, people who work at the Today Show. I want you to hear their reaction to what it is that he says, to what Chris Rock says. And I want you to ask yourself, why did he say it? What does he mean when he says it? Here's Chris Rock.
What would I be? I don't. I wanted to be the lion, you know, king of the jungle and all that. But I know that didn't work out. Snake is always good, you know, scare people. But I'll take the zebra. You know,
he's got game.
In honor of our zebra president, you know, black and white, white and black. That sounded like the Jeffersons, right? That sounded like George. I meant that. I love our president, but he's, you know, he's black and white. He appeals to all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm going for.
Good. Have you mentioned this to him, by the way? Because I wonder how he would react to
I don't
the analogy you're making.
You know. We ignore the president's whiteness, but it's there. It's there.
We ignore his whiteness. But
it's there.
But what does it mean? We ignore his whiteness. What do we ignore?
That his blackness overrides his whiteness.
But he's saying that he has a whiteness about him. He appeals to all. Now, I've already surmised what it is that he's saying. But
he appeals to none.
Well, he clearly appeals to some.
But those sums are nuns.
Well, no, sums are, you know.
Are nuns.
Yeah, you know what they are. Anyway.
No, let's not make it. We're not. This is not a racist issue.
No,
they're just, you know.
Morons.
Exactly.
That's what I was going to say. But what does that mean? What's the undertone of calling him a zebra president? Because that's what he's saying. We ignore his whiteness, but it's there. What's there? What about his whiteness is there?
Well, what isn't about his whiteness there?
Well, is there a difference between the two? Other than skin color, of course. What's the difference?
There shouldn't be a difference, but there clearly is.
By whom?
By stereotypical thinkers.
Or race baiters.
Because your blackness makes you down. Your whiteness makes you be able to congregate with the rest of the whiteies. So you can play both sides of the coin.
But okay, but he's saying his whiteness is there. What about his whiteness is there? What about Barack Obama can be construed as whiteness?
Whatever black people don't like.
That's an interesting way to look at it, Mary. Whatever,
black people can't relate to.
And what is it that black people don't relate to when it comes to whites?
Apparently, according to black people, a whole boatload of stuff.
But yeah, I mean, again,
the food they eat, the mannerisms, the, you know, the people you hang with. According to black people, it's a whole slew of things.
But that would almost suggest that, okay, so let's take Russians versus Irish. You know, should we say that Russians and Irish people who are both white, Irish people eat haggis, and this is food that Russians won't eat, so therefore this makes them different? I mean, I know he's trying to say cultural differences.
Russians and Irish people are nothing alike, regardless whether their skin color is the same or not.
But their differences are based on culture. It's based on culture.
Yes, and so black and white people, don't you think, have major cultural differences?
No.
Oh, really?
Absolutely not.
Really?
No, I don't. And when you say the word culture, what are you meaning? When you say cultural differences, they eat
things
different
like,
foods. Everyone eats
like
different foods.
Swagger.
Let's be a little clearer about what you mean by swagger. Or the way they walk. That's different, or their attitude is different.
Smoothness. White people, you know, crackers are more like
uptight?
Yeah. Like crackers, dry.
Really? I mean, I wouldn't have said that about the Fonz. I wouldn't have said that the Fonz was uptight.
But the Fonz was cool in a cracker cool way.
Well, no, no, no. You keep using this cracker term. Why do you have to say that?
Well, why not? You use the N-word.
Okay, I guess you being a white girl, I guess you can use as much
you
as you want.
You can use it as much as you want
the
to.
The Fonz was
damn.
Strictly, he was strictly, Italian.
What?
Well, Arthur Fronzarelli, his character was Italian. But are you suggesting? Well, see, you said the word
cool,
cool or sweat.
To crack a
I don't
he
find
wasn't
that.
Cool to black
I
kids.
Don't find that.
Black kids was not running around talking about, hey, you know. Come
and
on,
and
you know
think
that
about
Vern,
it. For the time, he was really a throwback
no
too.
Hold on,
about
hold
the
on.
Damn Fonz.
Hold on. What'd you
they
say, Jay?
They were talking about Run DMC.
Hold on.
No, no. I'm saying for the time, Arthur Fonzarelli was a throwback. I mean, he was like the 50s biker, the James Dean from back then.
I'm using Arthur Fonzarelli as a character. There were plenty of characters in our history who were considered cool or had a swagger, if you will, who were what?
But in a no.
Yeah,
no,
Mr. Carterra. He was
swagger amongst crackers.
Yes,
is different.
Wait. Hold
but
on.
It's a totally
I mean,
different...
I'm using fictional characters here, but understand what it is that I'm saying, is that everyone has a level of coolness or swagger. I don't think that swagger is just...
But it's a coolness that only certain groups of people can relate to on a majority level.
Yeah, they can relate to, but others tend to idolize it.
Right.
What?
You're saying others tend to idolize blackness?
Right.
Okay, all right. So you're saying that, okay, so that's what it is that's a difference here. You're
and look at
that,
all the things that Barack Obama has been able to get away with because...
Why did he get... Hold on. See, that's where you're wrong.
He's
been able to get away with as though it was illegal or wrong for him to do.
Well, he got away with it without scrutiny. In other words, without at least being criticized for it. But then I would also say Bill Clinton was considered in that same vein. Remember what Toni Morrison said when she referred to Bill Clinton as the first black president. When she referred to him as the first black president, the reason why she said that was because of certain things that she attributed to blackness.
And what was that?
Oh,
getting
like
your ducks in
eating McDonald's, an affection for heavy white girls.
What affection for heavy white girls?
Jazz musician.
Jazz music. You know, these were things.
What, white folks don't like jazz music? That's a black thing?
Apparently.
Yeah, it very much is.
It very much is.
But that's a falsity.
I am in no way validating what she said. What I'm saying is that these terms that are being used are literally based upon things about that separate blacks and whites that I think are false.
The African American culture.
Black and Barack.
Well, one would argue that if you were to really, really look at that from what Chris Rock is trying to say, clearly Bill Clinton was a blacker president. If you were to use that term, I mean, can you understand my argument here?
Different strokes for different folks. Your opinion is your opinion, and that's fine.
So you can't say you don't know what it is that Chris Rock's talking about, other than you're saying that he's got swagger and yet he can be uptight.
He can play both sides of the coin. He can appeal to white people and he can appeal
to
black
people.
How does he appeal
to them? How does he appeal to white people?
Because of this is stereotypical. He's well spoken, well mannered. Well dressed.
Well,
he's
I can kind of agree with her there.
Black guy.
It's the Greg and Brian Gumbel syndrome.
So
that Carlton Banks thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so those things are considered whiteness.
Like white people are like, we know your skin color is black, but.
You're a cool, acceptable black.
You've been around our people for so long that we've...
You're a cool,
like,
acceptable black.
...injected you with some of our... We've brainwashed you with some of our whiteness. So
no, I don't think it's brainwashed.
Okay.
You whoa, did
not
you?
Not
wait a minute, hold on, Reese.
We've injected you.
I'm listening to this
we've
in
injected
complete
you
awe.
With
no, I'm telling you to go look in the mirror.
Have a substantial
no, I wouldn't consider. First off, no one would ever suggest that I have whiteness in me.
Oh, are you kidding?
No. That's what. Hold on. If they were to suggest that, that's just because of their stereotypical reasoning of how a black person is supposed to behave, which is usually associated with negativity.
Well, and
you don't act as the stereotypical black African American male.
And again, I'm trying to. Okay, so what would be typically black, JC? That would be the best question to ask.
Chris Rock.
I wouldn't agree with that at all. What Chris Rock is stereotypically black?
As black as they come. He bleed oil.
What would be considered stereotypically black is my question.
Stereotypically black.
Hold on. What?
Chris Rock, Kevin Hart, Mike Epps.
Kevin Hart's kind of crackerish.
No, that's just to get by.
Mike in Florida sent a Twitter. He says, "Yo, tell Mary I'm not dry, damn it." Mike hardly disagrees.
Mike, don't take it personal, crack a friend.
Excuse me, that's a brother in Florida, little do you know.
What'd you say, JC?
That's one of my brothers in Florida, you know.
Yeah, that's one of your brothers in Florida now? What I think that he's saying about Barack Obama is that his whiteness means that he's not black enough. That's what he's saying.
Yeah, pretty much the same deal some more said.
Again, stereotypical, he's not black enough because he doesn't go around acting in a stereotypical manner on how the unexposed, there are so many people that are not exposed to how all black people are, you know? There's so many people that are only exposed to black people in the media. Black people on police reports.
Uh-huh.
They don't have black friends.
Right.
They don't hang around with enough black people to realize that not all black people smoke weed and wear their pants hanging down their ass.
But isn't that a stereotypical claim about African Americans?
Well, it is, but that's because
you're saying that black people perpetuate that their own stereotype when criticizing black people for not acting black enough.
Oh, definitely.
Well, that's again, here's my point about Chris Rock, a clear liberal, an ardent liberal, who says that there's whiteness about him. We can't forget that. We have to remember that he's white. And that's my whole point, is that only people who are liberals have to point out that there are cultural differences between people in the United States, instead of saying that, look, we all have different personalities, but we've got to point out these stereotypes as if to suggest to say, oh, if we don't, we're not cool.
And there's stereotypes about everybody. There's stereotypes about white people, black people, you know.
But are they fair?
Black people smoke blunts if they smoke weed. White kids or white people smoke bongs or white boys, you know. No, they're not fair.
White boys, to clear that up, is, and I heard that terminology for the first time yesterday.
Or wait, if you're in the South, I have a better one for you.
Well, let me explain what it is, please.
Okay.
White boys is the terminology they use when you roll a joint in, you know, rolling paper.
Bamboo.
In regular bamboo or easy wider.
Ain't no white people using no damn
and
easy wider.
Whatever. In the South, so I've heard so far, that they refer to a joint, commonly used, a joint as a white boy because of course.
No, that's not just in the South. That's amongst a lot of white people.
Well, I've never heard the term before.
In the South, they don't call them white boys. They call them hog legs.
And why are they called hog legs?
Because they roll about a dime bag. And
because they're thick?
Yeah.
I know
because they roll
them
like the size of blunts, right. But they're in white boy papers.
So a cultural difference would be how it is that you smoke your marijuana.
Yeah.
That's a cultural difference? That's not a matter of taste. That's a great question. Couldn't it be a matter of taste? Or what it is that you're exposed to?
Well, it's a matter of what you're exposed to.
Everything that people do in life is a pattern of what they're exposed to.
That's true.
So,
and if you hang out with a bunch of people that smoke hog legs and white boys,
well, white people
that's
don't.
What you're gonna do.
Yeah, but that would be insinuating that the entire nation of whites or the entire nation of blacks get together at some private meeting and they suggest this is how we behave. This is what it is that we do.
No, it's not that they're getting together at a meeting. It's just your.
Was their network?
It's your community. If you don't expose yourself outside of.
They mimic their environment is what they do.
Yeah, if you're in a limited environment, then yes, it is.
Then how is it culturally? Let's take, for instance, right? You guys use the word cultural. Let's take the behavior of young men who, you know, even while wearing belts, they walk around with their pants sagged down. These young men have never met each other. They're all wearing the same fashion.
Well, because that's something that they think is cool. And a lot of that is driven by female reaction
it's not by association. It's an advertisement, if you will, of behavior that they see within the media. Now, hear me out. It's the same reason people react to Gucci bags or Manolo Blahniks at a time, which is a huge thing. You know, those things were about being advertised to a certain group. Because I would say, are black women and white women different? They both have obsessions with expensive high-end bags per person, for instance. That's culturally crossed. Right?
Hmm.
I mean, you know what I mean? It's like white people love Gucci and Fendi just as much people in the hip-hop culture do. So you wouldn't say that they behave differently if they're both into the same thing. Everyone culturally is interested in the same type of expensive, like, you know, BMW aren't just popular with white rich guys. So you get my argument.
I see your argument, but it's kind of hard to determine. It's kind of hard to determine and pinpoint exactly where those lines blur. But obviously they do at some point.
I believe that black people associate their culture with ignorance, and that makes you authentically black. That's right.
No, that's dead wrong. And then whites do the same thing.
Oh, hold on. No. I'm not saying that whites don't. I'm just talking about with Chris Rock in this particular case. Certain behavioral things that black people do are not supposed to be done, and if they are, you have to be associated with the other group. It's saying that in order to maintain your authentic blackness, you have to behave in a negative way. And I think when Chris Rock mentions, we have to recognize his white side, he just can't be Barack Obama. He's got to have a black side and a white side.
Right.
Identify. That's where my argument is. But only people.
I don't think that he has to have both. You know, for that he is just Barack Obama. But
he barely knew. I mean, the white people he knew in his life had an ideological view. That's true, beyond a shadow of a doubt. But that I don't believe had anything to do with whiteness. I think that just had to do with ideology. Him speaking well. Was because, not because he was around people who spoke well, it was because that's just a choice. You choose to speak the way that you're going to speak. You don't speak because someone else mandated
you
do
it. No. Exposure is very huge.
exposed to other to things that are other, you know. Okay. If I hang around with a group of people that have a particular accent, if I move from
right.
here to Alabama.
Right. That is cultural.
Okay. If I move from here to Alabama.
Right.
I will, 9 times out of 10, pick up a somewhat southern twang.
Of course
well,
you will.
I try not to. I've been there. But it happens to people. So
sure.
your exposure to life leads you into who you are.
I, trust me, I understand it. In fact, I've talked to Derek the Bounty Hunter often about this for years. He's from New York, grew up with us in New York. When he moved down to Florida, I'll never forget how clear it was that his accent had changed. And that is because people in his area talk a certain way, and you catch yourself doing that. You know, everyone laughed at Madonna when she moved to England. And a girl from Detroit all of a sudden had this English accent, and people made fun of her. People used to make fun of Tina Turner. You know? All of a sudden, Hattie Mae's got an accent.
Hattie Mae.
You know? Hattie Mae got an accent? And JC, you
Anime.
Know?
Anime.
What's her name?
Anime.
Anime. Well, I always call her Hattie Mae. Anime. Anime. All of a sudden.
You had to forgive her because she had the that country twang and drawl beat out of her.
Well, of course. Of course. But again, that was, you know, that I consider a cultural change, if you will.
Well, I mean, if you listen to her now,
right.
she sounds like Grace Jones. It's sort of like a she's got like this British, French, German thing going. Yes, she does. It's weird.
It's a very, very weird, weird way that she talks. But again, I don't know.
Beat the subject.
We beat it up enough. Thank you, Mary, for telling us that we should move on. I didn't realize that we had actually gone.
She is strictly from the Chitlin' Circuit.
All right, we'll move on. We'll take a break when we come back. I want to talk about Slutty Wednesday.
Bees with the black. You got to play that.
Oh, all right. You know what, JC? During the
this
break.
This is a perfect time to play that.
I think it is a perfect time. You know what? JC, we'll take a break. I want you to download a song called Bees with the Black. It's a music video.
A parody.
A parody off the Nicki Minaj song. Do you think you can find it?
And what is it called?
Bees with the Black. If you look it up on YouTube, you should be able to find Bees with the Blacks parody, and you should be able to find it.
It's hilarious.
It's pretty funny.
A Bees with the Blacks.
Tell me when you found it, and then upload it.
Wow. Is that by Bart Barker?
Does it say parody? It should say it on there. We'll take a break and we'll see if we can find it. See if we can upload it within the next 5 or 6 minutes. Okay.
We'll try. We'll look for it.
All right, you got it.
All right, Chief. One moment.
Let's take a break when we come back. Slutty Wednesday in New York. And we'll preview our interview coming up in a little bit. With a name by the, man by the name of Frank Cipolla and his book, It Shocks Even Us. We'll be returning to Prince on the Radio. Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. Roots on the Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
The Obama attack machine has started, spending millions to sling mud or oil at Mitt Romney. Why? Because in the 5 states where Obama is attacking Romney, gas prices have roughly doubled. But Obama's mud can't cover up his failed energy policies, policies that are hurting small businesses and working families. America deserves solutions, not attack ads covering up Obama's failures. 4 years of failed leadership. or all we can afford. Send a message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Bleu.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi, how you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
This is the real state of our union. But you won't hear stories like those at President Obama's address tonight. The unemployed don't get tickets to sit next to the First Lady. Instead tonight, the President will do what he does best. He'll give a nice speech.
The idea of America endures.
A lot of memorable phrases in it.
That our future is hopeful.
But he won't give you the hard numbers.
Our journey goes forward, and the state of our union is strong.
Three years ago, we measured candidate Obama by his hopeful promises and his slogans. Today, President Obama has amassed an actual record of debt, decline, and disappointment. I'd use the State of the Union to lay out an agenda that will get our country back on track and get our fiscal house in order. We need to nominate someone who is an experienced leader, who has the qualities of leadership, the character, the judgment, the seriousness, the sobriety, the capacity demonstrated time and time again as a leader to help guide our party at a critical time and make sure that we hold onto the House, that we capture the Senate, and that we get back the White House and restore to America what is rightfully ours. A great nation, united, free, and prosperous for our kids and for their kids. Thank you so very much.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reese on Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
President Barack Obama named himself one of the country's four best presidents. Better than George Washington, John F. Kennedy, and even Ronald Reagan. But Mr. President was just being modest. He's in fact America's best president at piling on debt. So good that he has managed to pile on nearly as much debt as all the previous presidents combined. All he needed was just 4 years to outspend 220 years of history. We can't afford four more years of America's best president.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right, ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right, it's www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on BlogTalkRadio.com.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby. Twinkle, twinkle.
Reese on the Radio, and we're back 39 minutes after the hour right here.
Why are we getting feedback? Is there any particular reason for that? JC?
Not I am over here on mute.
Huh. Well, I think that's why it is because you're on mute. Because
you're
I don't
feedback?
Hear. Yeah, when I don't when you're on mute, I don't I mean when you're off mute, I don't hear it anymore.
Try it again.
I'm hearing it now. Yep.
Wow.
I don't know what it is, but it's happening. Anyway, okay, so you found the song.
Yes.
You did find the song. So we were talking about this, and apparently it's the song that Nicki Minaj has called Bees in the Trap. I'm sure plenty of people have heard it if you listen to some of these trash hip-hop stations out there. Again, this is a white guy. And a perfect example of stereotyping within our, I guess within our culture today. But listen to what he says in the song.
And don't be offended. It's hilarious.
Well, if you get offended, who cares? I don't care.
But don't waste your own time getting offended. That's what I'm saying. All right,
here it is.
It's
yo, man. Never liked grits, only egg McMuffins. But now I'm eating chitlins with some cornbread stuffing. Cause I bees with the black, beat bees with the black. I bees with the black, beat bees with the black. Used to ride a scooter, now I drive a big caddy. Girl, I am not your husband, I'm your baby daddy. Cause I bees with the black, beat bees with the black. I bees with the black, beat bees with the black. Used to play Go Fish, used to play Uno. Used to play some other games that probably you don't know. Bring them golf clubs to me, think that golf course open. Might play a couple rounds if that golf course open. I be Tiger stroking, I'm a Gino joking. Since I started hanging with blacks, I be Newport smoking. Plus I shoot them cracks, that's how I relax. So if you wanna find me, I'll be with them blacks. Only wore corduroys my parents used to get me. But now I'm sagging skinny jeans that really don't fit me. Cause I bees with the blacks, beat bees with the blacks. I bees with the blacks, beat bees with the blacks. Used to call you pretty when I saw you all the time. But you're no longer pretty, you're a motherfucking dime. Cause I bees with the blacks, beat bees with the blacks. I bees with the blacks, beat bees with the blacks. Come on now, pick me, pick me, pick me. Put me on your team, please. Got some Jordans that don't fit me, but my dribbles are so tricky. If I ain't D-ing, I'll be 3-ing. If I ain't 3-ing, I'll be T-ing. When I say T-ing, I mean taking it to the hole. Voted for McCain, but now I might just vote Obama. Used to have a wife, but now she just my baby mama. No, I'm not black, but I still love that Bravo drama. Atlanta housewife, no longer watching Futurama. Funny. Howdy. Got me sagging trousers. But I'm still afraid to walk in front of public housing.
Oh, no.
NASDAQ killer, I do it from my browser. Dow Jones up, I just made 100,000. Yeah. Never liked grits, only egg McMuffins. But now I'm eating chitlins with some cornbread stuffing. Cause I bees with the blacks, beat bees with the blacks. I bees with the blacks, beat bees with the blacks. Used to ride a scooter. So you get my point.
He even says he might vote for Obama.
Yeah, once voted for Kane, might even vote for Obama.
Have obviously you watched the video.
Yes, we've seen the video.
Oh my God. They had to find the biggest, blackest, corn-fed eating, and they're eating out of big
styrofoam plates and
fried chicken, fish.
Yeah. And that's the part that makes me laugh. The part that makes me laugh about this the most is that this white guy is in a barber shop for most of the video getting his hair shaped up. That's what they call it in the hood, folks. Getting his hair shaped up.
Or just getting the shape up.
And he's got all of these black kids around him, young men around him, wearing dreads with the saggy pants, the whole nine, braids and everything, right? Clearly from the hood, or representing the hood. And here it is, he's ripping them apart in a parody. And they are actively enjoying it.
bouncing and participating.
And bouncing
cooning,
and participating.
Buffooning.
Exactly.
It's sad.
Cooning and buffooning.
Cooning and buffooning.
But you know what? It's comedy.
What's that?
It's comedy.
Hey, it's comedy. Hey, you know me. I don't care about how well, how much it offends anybody. But I just want to show you that's, you know, if anyone is saying that that is the way that black people are supposed to behave, and when you parody it, that's just, you know, that's just fine with me. You know, I, you know, I, let me give you a perfect example, if I may. I put this audio on the show. I wanted to play it a couple of days ago because I asked the question on Facebook, and people responded and said, "Oh, it's just a joke. Let it go." But listen to Saturday Night Live. Saturday Night Live talking about an articulate African American.
According to insiders, a group of wealthy Republicans are working on a new super PAC campaign that would use a, quote, extremely literate conservative African American to attack President Obama. The group did have someone in mind, but had to start their search over when they found out Carlton Banks was fictional. Would have been perfect. It would have been perfect.
And they shout, and this is a majority white audience, laughing at a joke that says an articulate black person to attack President Obama is fictional.
Well, I think it sounded more to me like they were ripping on the Republican Party. Saying
clearly
that the Republican
they are.
Saying that the Republican Party did not know
that
Carlton was a fictional
No. They're saying that they couldn't
that they
found
so
one.
They couldn't find
no,
anybody
couldn't
articulate
find
enough.
They couldn't find one.
No, they had
right.
to start the search over.
Over the
again.
Search. If you're starting a search and the only person you found was Carlton Banks, that means you're starting the search over. The only person they could think of was Carlton Banks. It is in essence for saying there were none real African Americans who were articulate.
But I think that Saturday Night Live is saying that that's how the Republicans feel.
It's no.
Not
with
how
an
Saturday
audience
Night
full
Live
of Republicans.
With an audience full of Republicans, if there were, and you know there weren't, there was an audience full of liberals. You can rag on. See, that's what I'm saying. Calling articulate blacks Republicans, you can make a joke about that. You can clown on Herman Cain. That's my whole point.
That's ugly.
It is ugly. It's a racist joke. Like it or not.
Very,
it's racist. Very. It's no other way to put it. It's racist.
According to insiders, a group of wealthy Republicans are working on a new super PAC campaign that would use a, quote, extremely literate conservative African American to attack President Obama. The group did have someone in mind, but had to start their search over when they found out Carlton Banks was fictional. It would have been perfect.
I don't know any other way to put that. That is flat out racist.
It's a double slap, but it's a very light-handed slap at the Republicans.
Yeah, exactly.
And an even darker, harder slap at African Americans. Because they're saying that you can't find any
you're
other
saying
than
that
a fictional character.
The only articulate black that they could find was a fictional character.
One that was made up.
But no one noticed. No one even batted an eye. And everybody says, oh, it's a joke, ha, ha, ha. But you know what? If any liberal had made that, I mean, any Republican had made that joke, if anyone, any Republican had made that joke,
Someone really not too long ago said something about the president being articulate and everybody went bananas about it.
It was Joe Biden who referred to President Obama as articulate and clean.
Right. That was during the when he was running against him.
That's right. He's a great American story, he said. He's articulate, clean. That's what Biden said.
Why would you say something like
that? Just the reason, same reason why Biden made that crack about going into a 7-Eleven and not finding an Indian working there. You can't go into one You couldn't go to one 7-Eleven without finding one of them working there. You said about the Indian people.
I know, I heard.
And those accents.
I mean, come on. This is who they are. That means it's just the bottom line. I could say it a million different ways, but, you know.
I thought it was funny.
It was funny.
I'm sure
it was funny, but
I thought what Biden said was funny, and I thought.
Whoa. Okay. Let's take this into consideration. If it's funny, that's fine. I have no argument with that. I don't even mind if the racism.
I mean, because we know it's true. It's true.
Are you suggesting that when you go into the 7-Eleven, you only find Indian people there? Or are you suggesting that Barack Obama is articulate and clean? Which one is Biden right about?
And the sad part about that one is that he really believes that.
The only 7-Eleven I've ever been into was in outside. The only 7-Eleven I've ever been into that didn't have an Indian, that it was actually like an American white person working there.
If not Indian, Pakistani or Middle Eastern.
It was an American white person.
Okay, but where was
it? There were several of them, actually.
Where was this?
In Tampa, Florida.
Okay. I don't even know how to respond to that.
Middle Easterners, I mean, for the most part, only go to Florida to learn how to fly.
And most 7-Elevens you'll find are, like, they're Pakistani.
You didn't hear that blatantly racist thing he just said?
What did he say?
Repeat what you just said, JC.
The only Middle Easterners that go to Florida, they just go there to learn how to fly.
Oh, my God.
Did you hear what he just said?
Oh, my God.
I had a Biden moment.
Yes, you did.
That was more than a Biden moment.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
Oh, well, that's where they took the flight lessons at. What the hell?
So, I mean, what he said was predominantly true.
Is it predominantly true?
Come on now. At least in my experiences, 7-Elevens in Virginia, Maryland, D.C.,
okay.
New York.
How about this? Wait. How about this? Let's go... to an audio I know you heard because I played this for you. This is another liberal talking about Mitt Romney. Okay? Talking about Mitt Romney. You remember this. When you hear it, you remember it.
He's so condescending, talking to African Americans about how they need to raise their children in two-parent households. This is not the way in which you endear yourself to a minority.
Isn't that what's her name? Your favorite... Was that someone?
No, that's not Soledad O'Brien. That's another woman. But remember what she said. She said that he's condescending
by saying
telling
that
blacks that they need to raise. That's condescending?
Well, she's a clear moron.
How about a racist?
How about just a straight up
But how
moron?
About a racist?
Yeah. I think that she wants people to see it as racist.
No. She wants to see Mitt Romney as racist. What she said was flat-out racist.
I think she wants people to view Mitt Romney as racist.
But in doing so, she made a racist comment.
Well, of course. She had to, and she had to do that in order to get people to think that. That had to be a part of her interpretation
of
what
she said. Is she an idiot or is she a racist,
though? She did not say that.
But is she an idiot or a racist?
She's a race baiter.
She's a racist. Anyone that suggests, anyone who would suggest that it's condescending to talk to black people about two-parent households, suggests that two-parent households in the black community is foreign.
Yes, I comprehend that.
Uh-huh.
But that's your interpretation of what she said. My interpretation, and you have every right to the interpretation that you choose to have. My interpretation to what she said, to what her fault is race baiting. I can't say that she's a racist because I don't know. I don't personally know her.
If there was
she could have said that just so that she could get other people to think that Romney was racist.
You know something real funny?
Go ahead. Because I'm about to explain something to Mary that she's never ever heard before.
No, but seriously, I understand that you want me to see it your way.
I don't want you to see it my way. It's something that is a fact. It's not about seeing anything my way.
You don't know that that's a fact.
Trust me, it is a fact.
You don't know how
if there is a D next to your name and you vote liberal or you are a liberal, you are a racist by nature. That is a fact.
Well,
because you see everything through the prism of race. Therefore, makes you a racist. If you associate everyone by the race or the color of their skin, this inherently makes you a racist. Like it or not.
But I can't say that everybody, that's how all Democrats.
All liberals think that. All liberals. All liberals see things
through the prism of race. I don't know them, so I won't judge that. Sorry. You'll never get me.
JC, go ahead. Did you want to say something? I didn't mean to cut you off.
What's so funny is the very first 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
1927 Dallas, Texas.
Oh, really?
And there are over close to 34,000 franchises worldwide. They exceed McDonald's. And not one of them is in a Middle Eastern country.
Nah, that's wild.
Not one.
Not one?
No. Not one.
How many franchises are there?
Close to 34,000.
It's funny because even where I see one right around the corner from another.
Mhm. There are
Hong Kong,
one
Japan,
here,
Macau,
here,
Malaysia,
IMART, something
the Philippines, but, Singapore, yeah. South Korea, Taiwan, Thailand,
hey, did,
Canada,
did that,
Mexico.
Did that store first open? Did 7-Eleven first open on July 11th?
Yeah, let's
doesn't give the exact date.
But
started out as a gas station.
I do remember that. I was trying to figure out, because I know that they used to do a thing called 7-Eleven. Like, on July 11th, they do, like, a hot dog thing.
They
or
do Slurpees.
Oh, is it a Slurpee thing?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's free Slurpees on July 11th every year?
Yeah,
they did that for a little time. It started out as a gas station.
They're about an inch tall?
They're, like, 7 ounces, maybe.
That looks even smaller than 7 ounces.
They're literally like one cup. So one cup is 8 ounces.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know,
it started
as
a gas station
that
sold ice.
Uh-huh.
And then it went into selling milk and eggs.
All right, it went into selling milk and eggs, and then what else?
And then other little items when that started to sell out. And people came there for more than just, you know, the milk and eggs. But not one of these stores are in any Middle Eastern country.
I wonder why they sort of gravitate towards that franchise.
And it's owned by a company in Japan who happens to have a world headquarters in Dallas, Texas.
Huh. Well, I know that. I do remember they started in Texas.
Yeah.
I'm always fascinated
by that. Obviously not. They started in Japan.
No, they are owned by a company in Japan. They started in Texas. Anyway, break. When we come back, we will have Mr. Frank Cipolla. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. JC, will you make sure that I know what his name is when we get back?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. We'll take a break. It's Reese on the Radio.
To do commentary at Fox News, which is actually very similar to her day job, talking to a baby with Down syndrome.
Speaking of dumb
it's not because they have breasts, it's because they are boobs.
I hope Sarah Palin gets in so that they split the MILF vote.
That's not sexist.
I would like to announce a donation to the Obama Super PAC.
I thought about Malia and Sasha. I want them to be able to speak their mind in a civil and thoughtful way, and I don't want them attacked or called horrible names because they're being good citizens.
I would like to give that PAC $1 million.
Sarah Palin, the strange family of inbred weirdos. She flew by over and over until a baby fell out. The Maverick and the Milk. They fined CBS $1 million for Janet Jackson's nipple. Think what they could get for Hillary Clinton's cut. That's not sexist.
All decent folks can agree. The remarks that were made don't have any place in the public discourse.
She is the chair of the Democratic National Committee.
I don't know any woman in America that thinks that being called a slut is funny.
Please welcome Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Being part of a democracy involves argument and disagreements and debate, and there's a way to do it that doesn't involve you being demeaned and insulted.
Speaking of dumb fucks, this is a Category 5 moron we have on our hands, and I am unapologetic.
Top 10 highlights of Sarah Palin's trip to New York City. Number two, what makeup at Bloomingdale's update her slutty flight attendant look?
I'm going to try to lead by example.
During the seventh inning, her daughter was knocked up by Alex Rodriguez.
To send a message to all our young people, I'm going to try to lead by example.
Speaking of dumb quads, Maher decided to help President Obama out and give him a financial boost.
He's donated $1 million.
Last week, I said goodbye to $1 million. I made a contribution to Obama's super PAC.
This ends up being a teachable moment.
I wouldn't put anything past this stupid country.
All decent folks can agree. The remarks that were made don't have any place in the public discourse. I'm going to try to lead by example in this situation.
You're seeing a president adopt policies which affect our economy based not upon what's right for the American worker, but instead what's right for their politics. The National Labor Relations Board, now stacked with union stooges selected by the president, says to a free enterprise like Boeing, you can't build a factory in South Carolina because South Carolina is a right-to-work state. That is simply un-American. It's political payback of the worst kind. It is wrong for America, and it is something that will stop under my administration. I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Television is a goddamn amusement park. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. So if you want the truth, go to God. Go to your gurus. Go to yourselves. Because that's the only place you're ever going to find any real truth. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of a sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off.
Come on.
All the humanity. All the...
Mary had a little lamb and she was white as snow. And everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool. Ah! Ah! Ah!
I never once said, na-da-da.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
Three minutes after the hour right here on Reese on the Radio on this Therapy Thursday, June the 7th, 2012. I don't even know where to begin. There are plenty of topics in the news. And I felt it was only right to bring somebody who's a news veteran. The guy's got more years on his belt than I have. The guy's been in his business forever. I mean, he's gone so far back, 30 years? 30 years. He appears to be a novice. No, I'm kidding. He's definitely. And he worked in my hometown, or our hometown, I should say, Mary. He worked in our hometown in the tri-state area. He worked over at Channel 9 News. He's worked with everybody in the business. Just to give you a little bit of this gentleman's resume, which is, as far as I'm concerned, is pretty relevant. He is the award-winning American television and radio news broadcaster and the author of a book titled It Shocked Even Us and More Crazy Stories Covering Local News. Our guest today on Reese on the Radio is Mr. Frank Cipolla.
Reese, thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it. Thank you for that build-up. I feel so very old now.
Well, the idea is to give you tenure, sir. The idea is to give you tenure. You've been here. You've been in this business long enough. You know, you've got not only years of experience, but I'm pretty sure you've got some war stories.
Well, all in the book. All in the book.
All in the book. And tell us a little bit about this book. Are there going to be some anecdotes, or is just more about – because the title in and of itself – sounds like it's going to be about, like, you know, the most shocking stories or the things that have completely blown your mind as a reporter and media expert.
Well, the definitive book on this subject, Reese, was written in 1979 by an NBC reporter named Bob Teague. I'm sure you remember Bob Teague.
Sure do.
And what Bob did was he parted the curtain and showed everyone what it was like to be a news person in the 1970s. When I started in the late 70s, I always said to myself, when I write a book, it will be the answer to this book. So here we are 30 years later. And to answer your question, the stories are not so much shocking as they are funny. This is a memoir. This is a memoir and all the funny stories along the way that I've been telling for 30 years. Everything that happens behind the scenes in a radio and TV newsroom that no one knows about, and how things get on the air at the last minute just by hook or by crook. So these are all the funny stories and all the personalities and everything. It's really a love letter to this business, but it's a wonderful, easy, digestible read that you can take to the beach or the pool or the mountains, wherever you might go, and small, digestible stories, and really laugh. These are just funny stories.
So is it sort of like a comedic look at behind the curtain for the rest of the world who doesn't get an opportunity to see that side of the world?
No, these are stories that have happened along the way. They're funny stories because I bump into funny, laughable people who are in this industry, and a lot of them are very, very good journalists. But, I mean, I've come across, as you have, I'm sure, the laughable station owner or the crazy news director, and things happen, decisions are made, you go out on a story, it doesn't happen exactly the way it's supposed to happen, and funny things happen. You know, there's about 8 or 10 pages about the Liza Minnelli wedding that took place in 2004, and it was one of the funniest things. It was one of those days where everything could possibly go wrong, and it did.
Please, well, can you give me just a little bit of insight? Give me a tease on what happened in that debacle.
Well, she married a gentleman, I believe his last name was Guest, and it was done in Manhattan, and every single celebrity in and around the New York area who still lives here was invited, also some from Los Angeles, a huge church in Manhattan. And we, of course, showed up late, and, we had just the leftover at Stars to interview. I think I remember interviewing, Paul Williams, the singer, and so on, and Joe Bologna. And we got as much as we could, and then the ceremony started, and we weren't allowed in the church, and we had to find a good vantage point. And I'm not going to give it all away, but we ended up bumping into one of these people that you would only find in New York City. He actually made large plastic molded characters, and we had to go off on top of his building, and it was too high, it was too low. We tried to get the signal out. The shooter, my photographer, locked the keys in the truck. Everything that could possibly go wrong went wrong that day, but somehow it got on the air. And that's the funny thing about it. You don't see the behind the scenes stuff when you watch Channel 9 or Channel 5 in New York City or any station in America. The important thing to stress is I spent most of my career and still do in the New York metropolitan area. But these are the funny stories that happen behind the scenes in every single radio and TV newsroom in the country, whether it's Wichita or San Antonio or Seattle or wherever it might be. These are the things that happen behind the scenes, and they're funny.
But now, aside from all the funny and the crazy stories, you've been involved in, the news broadcasting spectrum, the medium in and of itself. Were there stories there that were riveting to you that you really felt as though were life-changing for you personally?
Oh, yes, certainly. I mean, the one that comes to mind immediately is 9/11. I don't dwell on it in the book because it's far more people were far more affected than I was, and I thought if I was going to write a book that was going to be light and airy and breezy that I'd leave that out. But, yeah, certainly, I grew up in a time in New York City where I grew up in Queens. I remember the World Trade Centers going up. I used to watch them in the distance when I went to college and to see them go down, even years later. It was traumatic. I don't dwell on it. But I remember at a station I did a story about Italian-Americans, and I am one, who were actually interned very much like the Japanese Americans were during World War II, and this is a story that had never been told. Not only were Japanese Americans put in camps during World War II, but because the United States was fighting the Axis powers, and one of them was Italy, Italian Americans who were not citizens in the United States were also rounded up. Or if they were Italian Americans and they were citizens, they were told that they could not go beyond a mile from their homes. They had to quit their jobs. A lot of them lost property, just like the Japanese. And I was so happy to tell that story. It was one that I didn't know and one that I told in a three-part series, and it's probably the most enjoyable thing I ever did and the most rewarding thing I ever did.
Now, see, you're from Queens. Now, I'm happy to hear that. We're on the phone with Frank Cipolla, the author of the book It Shocked Even Us and More Crazy Stories Covering Local News. Frank, I'm from Queens. I'm from Hollis, Queens.
Okay.
Where are you?
I grew up in Richmond Hill, Queens. Richmond Hill, Queens.
Richmond Hill! You didn't go to school with Cyndi Lauper, did you?
Actually, she's in the book. She didn't live too far from me. Neither did Bette Midler. And right across the street from me was as a family I knew growing up, and the gentleman who was a little older than I and played with my brothers actually went on to become Jim McCann, who owns 1-800-Flowers. He lived right across the street from us. So, yeah, you know, Cyndi Lauper didn't live too far away, and she is in the book.
Oh, she is? Okay.
Yes,
did you have a relationship with her growing up?
No, we just knew her as a crazy girl with wacky hair. She was nutty even back then. She was known in the neighborhood, but nobody really knew, you know. She lived far enough away where, and I'm talking about far away enough away when I was a kid, maybe 6 or 7 blocks, that,
right,
you know, we knew her as a crazy woman, but, you know, she was just part of the tableau of what was that neighborhood at the time. But, yeah, she's in the book. Some other people growing up, as I mentioned, the owner of 1-800-Flowers. I loved growing up in Queens. It's a memoir, my book. It starts out as me as a paper boy in Queens, delivering at that time the New York Daily News.
And was that sort of your first thirst for getting into the news media?
Well, I'm actually blessed, Reese. I decided at the age of 10 that I wanted to be a news anchor, radio or television. I watched my heroes, Rollin Smith and Jim Jensen and Vic Miles and Bill Butel and Roger Grimsby and so many great, great reporters in this city in that day when news really meant something. And I decided at the age of 10 that that's what I wanted to be, and I never deviated from that trip, from that path.
You just mentioned every name that was my hero in news.
Oh, sure.
These
were our gods growing up. You know, it's funny. I mentioned Rollin Smith, who I not only love to watch, but emulate it. And if you read the book, and it can be found at itshockedevenus.com, you can get it 4 different ways. It's also an ebook at itshockedevenus.com, as in shocking, itshockedevenus.com. I mentioned Rollin Smith, and toward the end of the book, I had the great, great pleasure of him, and he and I actually anchoring a newscast on Channel 9 in the, I believe it was 2005. It was the greatest thrill of my life. I grew up watching this guy, and I shared the anchor desk with him at Channel 9. It was one of the great, great things that happened in my life.
See, if I were you, I would show that to all my friends whenever they showed up at my house.
Oh, I have pictures all over my den. There were plenty of them from all my days working at NBC and elsewhere.
I would never stop milking that. I would never, because these guys are great. I'm, of course, I'm probably a little bit younger than you. I mean, I grew up with Ernie Anastas and Kai Long. They were, you know, they worked together, and the reason why I've always loved news and broadcasting, when I was a kid watching Ernie Anastas and Kai Tong in New York on ABC's Channel 7 as a kid, they had such a symmetry, I almost thought they were married. They almost completed each other's news sentences. You know what I mean? I always looked at sort of newscasters, sort of like Sue Simmons and Chuck Scarborough, you know, a faint group in the New York area.
You invited them into your living room or kitchen every single night. They were and are family. These people we read about Sue Simmons, whose last day I read is June 15th. She's been her contract was not renewed. But, you know, you look at Sue Simmons. She started in 1979. What is that, 33 years? These are people who were in our family. We grew up with these people. And back then, they were even bigger because you had 7 stations in New York City and you didn't have 500 on cable. These were our gods.
Yeah, they were. And it's interesting you say that about how long she's been around. You know, she she was not a celebrity. I guess people like that. We never considered them celebrities. We did consider them family.
Oh, absolutely. There's a great story in the book. When I worked at Channel 9, the great meteorologist, Dr. Frank Field, and anybody who's watched a second of TV in New York City knows who Dr. Frank Field is.
Sure do.
Dr. Frank Field is a great meteorologist who actually started at NBC, went to ABC, and then to Channel 9 toward the end of his career. And he was the weatherman at Channel 9 when I got there in 2001. And, I had been there about 6 months or so, and I was just minding my business. And Dr. Frank Field called me from the other side of the newsroom. He gave me one of those fingers, those curled up fingers. Come over here. And I said, I'm walking across the newsroom saying, what in the world would Dr. Frank Field want with me? I've been as nice as I can, but he was annoyed at something, and he took me, he put his arm around him. I was a freelancer then at Channel 9, and he said, Frank, he said, if they don't hire you here full time, they're assholes, and he walked away.
Really?
And that was the first thing he ever said to me in my life, and I grew up watching him. It was like watching an icon, and there was this guy telling me, "Hey, you're good enough to be with us, and if they don't hire you, they're idiots." Essentially, he was saying,
right.
And that was a great thrill for me. And there's a great photograph of the book in the book of he and I. He actually calls me sometimes, and he'll be on the phone for 3 hours with me, Reese and Mary. And how do you tell Dr. Frank Field that you got to go? You can't.
You can't do it.
Yeah, that's impossible.
He likes to talk, and you listen. And when he says the conversation's over, then it's over.
Let me ask you some serious questions about your experience. One of the questions that I have here, and I think it's a great question. It says, in your experience, how often does actual news get twisted so ratings will increase? And do you believe that?
Well, I think it happens more often now than it ever has. I mean, there are channels out there that cater to a particular particular political bent, and people enjoy watching it because their views are reinforced.
Wow.
I grew up in the time where journalism was journalism, and there's a lot of journalists out there who are former beauty queens or models in some cases, men and women, who have never taken a journalism course in college. I studied it. And I think a lot of great older, and I guess I put myself in that category, older reporters and anchors respect the code of conduct. Number one, the first thing we were taught is you are not the news story.
Right,
the story is about the story, not you.
Right.
And I can't tell you in my book promotional tour how many interviewers, and you are one of the few exceptions, who don't understand that. They will talk for 15 minutes about themselves before they ask me a question. When I did interviews on TV and radio, Reese, I always let the interviewee know that person was the most important person. I never asked long questions. My questions are usually short. But there's a certain code of conduct that you learn when you go to school in journalism. Sadly, there are now a lot of people out there, younger people, who have a flip phone or a camera or some sort of iPhone that can take video. And because they're taking video, they think they are reporters. I like the fact that there are more cameras out there. I think that the more video, the better. However, what's missing is the journalistic and editorial level or layer that will prevent these facts from getting on the air or getting on the internet or being tweeted without any editorial review. If a kid comes across an accident, Reese, and he's taking video of this terrible car accident and somebody passes by and says, three people were killed, and he tweets it, well, there's no verification. Who knows? Where did he get that? So that part of it I don't like.
I agree with you there in a lot of ways. And I have to ask you this because we're both New Yorkers.
Right.
I don't know what your political leanings are. If you wish to disclose them during this question, that's fair. If you don't wish to, that's also fair. Here's my question. We both know there's no argument of the political leanings of the New York news media, as you just suggested. There's a lot more political leaning and personal involvement in the news story. The story's about the writer or the broadcaster as opposed to the story.
Yes.
Why do you believe, or do you, I should say, do you believe in New York that the medium of news in New York has really changed the way that the rest of the country has been broadcasting the news? Do you believe that New York has played a major role in that?
Well, New York, by being the number one market in the country, number one television and radio market in the country.
Which is why I asked.
Yeah, is an influence. There's no doubt about it. It's an influence on the rest of the country, because to work in New York City, as you and I do and Mary does as well, to work in New York City is to be in the number one market. People from all around the country aspire to be here, whether they're in the field of communications or fashion or whatever the case, or financing, whatever the case may be. Does it dictate to the rest of the country? I don't think so. I've traveled around. I've been to small television markets, and their badge of honor is they're not like New York. To answer your question, would I reveal what kind of political bent I have? This goes back to my journalism college education and my journalism school education. No, a reporter should never reveal what his political bent is. An anchor should never reveal what their political bent is. There's no reason to do that. You're supposed to report the facts as they are in an unbiased way. Sadly, there are stations out there on the local and network level who don't believe in that. And I think it's to the detriment of everyone, quite frankly.
But see, you've worked at a news network. I mean, be it, you know, it was Channel 9, which was, you know, I mean, well, it's a local station, but I mean, it's still in the New York market. You worked at Channel 9. Do you think that influence comes more from the anchor, the reporter, or does it come from the newsroom or the news director in general? Who do you think plays more of a role in that?
Oh, I think certainly it comes from the top, even above the news director. I have been in editorial meetings at stations over the years when the agenda was read to us. This story is going to be handled this way today. Conversely, because I consider myself a straight down the middle journalist, I was kept away from stories in which they needed someone to slant it. I mean, I've been in meetings where they've said, you know, go out and cover this story and make it sound this way, or make it more in this angle. They won't come out and say make it left or right, but what they're telling the reporter is, this is how I want to see the finished product. Something I don't believe in, and I always blanched when I heard that, and I tried everything in my power not to do that. I think, sadly, there are fewer and fewer journalists who go out nowadays because they weren't taught the right way, who go out and just cover a story for what it is, or tell the news director, this is not a story. I mean, I've had colleagues of mine go out on stories, and the story is really not a story. You know, it's either not as big as they thought it would be in the newsroom, or it doesn't really have any implications beyond one or two people, and they were told, do the story anyway.
Wow.
And, you know, they did it.
On the phone with Frank Cipolla, who is a media expert and author of It shocked even us, and more crazy stories covering the local news. Sticking with this conversation, there was a report that came out just recently about Les Moonves, who I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yes.
Les Moonves was at a Barack Obama fundraiser. And during an interview, he openly suggested that news media today is more partisan and more left partisan. This coming from the director of the news department or of a major network, do you find that shocking, or does it just go more to the point you just made about that's the way it is today?
Well, I do find it shocking. And I hate to say this because I'm sort of repeating myself, but when I was in college and learning journalism, we learned the history of radio and TV. Mm-hmm. And we understood that in the days of Bill Paley, when he ran CBS, there was a wall. There was a wall between management. There was a wall between entertainment and news. News wasn't designed to make money. It was a loss leader. In fact, Paley said many times, just cover the story. The Beverly Hillbillies and all these other TV shows will pay for what you do. Just go cover this story and tell us what it is. There's a great story in the book about Morley Safer, who covered the Vietnam War, and he covered the massacre at My Lai.
Sure.
And he reported it straight down the line. And he didn't know until a year later that Lyndon Johnson, the president at the time, called Bill Paley and was ranting and raving and cursing at Bill Paley based on the coverage of that story. But Bill Paley protected Morley Safer because he understood that news was a sacred cow. Right now, at least, that's not the case. The wall between entertainment, and we've seen it on local and national levels, and the wall between management and news is non-existent. It's all put together in one big entertainment. I talked about Dr. Frank Field a moment ago. His son, Stormfield, we were discussing news one time. He said, Frank, it's not even infotainment anymore. It's just tainment, minus the information. And I thought that was a very telling tale as well.
You know, it's funny that you say that because you've worked in radio, and I've often said this about my program directors. I've been very clear and very candid about program directors of talk stations. Now, you do a talk show yourself.
Well, I do a network newscast on the Wall Street Journal Radio Network.
Gotcha,
it's mostly business. I handle it as I have every single news story I've ever done, straight down the line, whether it's good or bad, and that's the way it rolls.
Right. Now, what I've said about my former program directors is that, and it's been confirmed by guys who are giants in this business, is that program directors have no idea what they're doing when it comes to talent on the air. And let me explain to you why. Because, see, program directors of radio stations, they get to control music on regular music stations, you know, top 40. Adult contemporary, those stations, you get to control the content. You know that this song is hot, this song is mediocre, this song is highly requested. A program director gets his ratings are based upon how he programs music. He can't control the talent as he would on a talk program. So if you have a talk show host, the program director gets no credit for how valuable the talk show host is. So I always say a program director at a talk network is a moron. Never listen to him. He doesn't know what he's talking about. I'll never forget it. I did a show in Boston, and my program director, Jason Wolf, came to me one day. I was having a conversation with some young black hip-hop artists talking about gun violence, and we were having a very honest conversation. I'm from Hollis, Queens. I'm, Run DMC, LL Cool J town. It was a very urban conversation. It wasn't like no one could understand what we were saying.
Right.
But he came to me and he said, your audience, your black audience is too small for you to have that conversation on the air. And I said, well, how small is my black audience?
Yeah.
He said, it's about 2%. So I went on the air and I told my audience, I'm sorry I can't talk about issues in the black community because there aren't enough black people listening to me. I just told them flat out. And the African-American audience screamed. I had another program director in New York who said we couldn't do a DJ portion of the show because not enough black people drive.
Well, the only thing worse than program directors who are like that are consultants. And you've had your share, I'm sure. They come in and they have to shake something up, otherwise they wouldn't get what they were supposed to be paid. And they make some dumb moves sometimes, and sometimes what we call in the business is, they just blow up the station. And then, of course, they get fired because that happens eventually, and it just leaves a smoldering wreck in its wake. That's unfortunate. The program director, it's still a business. Reese, quite frankly, it's still a business. The program directors are in the business to make money, or they're being heard from management or the operations manager or the general manager that they need to make more money. Right. And if that means that you can't do a show on rappers because your African-American audience is only 2%, then, he's going to tell you that. It's a sad fact of business. It's called the radio business. And, you do what you can. You try to work around them. I mentioned it in my book a couple of times. I've come in contact, and you have as well, with these laughable station owners who have no idea what's going on, or program directors who are getting their orders from above, and this is what you have to work with. Many, many times people have said to me, and I'm sure they've said to you and Mary as well, hey, you got this great job. You talk on the radio. That must be sensational. How do you get that job? They don't understand that behind the scenes there's a lot of not only learning your craft, it's a skill, but also a lot of maneuvering and wiggling to continue to do the show you want to do because you're constantly bucking up against management.
You know, that said, I want to ask you some more questions about your book, of course, because, I mean, that's, of course, why you're here. But before I get there, I want to ask you a question about headlines, because I know you follow the news. I know you deal with you're more or less, you know, doing sort of like a you do news breaks for the Wall Street Journal Radio Network. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So you deal with headlines.
Yes.
When you do those breaks.
Yes.
Dealing with headlines, and these are the things that I wanted to bring up to you and ask you a question. As a 30-year veteran in this business, if you can just break down for me why you would think these stories are not reported in mainstream news. So I'll give you what the topics are, and then you give me your assessment as to why you think these stories were not covered.
Okay.
So we'll make it sort of like a little game.
All right.
Okay? All right. Now, here's the first question. Just by the way, anyone who's just joining us, just so you know, we are on the phone with media expert and author of It Shocked Even Us and More Crazy Stories Covering Local News, Frank Cipolla. Here's the first question. Okay? The Catholic Church lawsuit against the federal government. Over 40 Catholic archdioceses are suing the federal government for the Obamacare mandate. Not one local news station covered it. In fact, let me recant that. One major network covered it for 19 seconds, and that was CBS. No other network covered it.
Well, you know, this is a really interesting question. You know, that's why they have editorial meetings and they sit down. Let's in defense of these networks. And I'm not talking about the cable networks for the time being. In defense of the major networks, ABC, CBS, and NBC, that do a nightly newscast every night, they're working with 22 minutes, Reese, and they have to make some very difficult decisions about what it is they think is important to cover. There might be some violence in Syria. There might be an issue at home. There might be the Supreme Court might make its decision about healthcare and the Obama healthcare. You know, there's so many things that could happen. They have to make these decisions. Sadly, yes, sometimes stories get 19 seconds. And to ask why, well, you know, you'd have to sit in on that editorial meeting. Do they do it deliberately? I think most legitimate, straight down the line stations do not do it legitimately. I think it's more a question of resources. Do we have somebody who can cover this story today, or is he or she out of position? Money, do we have the money to send somebody to Chicago and do an interview with a child who has been abused by the Catholic Church or one of the priests allegedly by one of the priests in the Catholic Church?
Right.
Do we have the time based on, you know, serious covering this much of the news? I don't think they do it deliberately. You know, the news every night on TV and the news on radio is headline news, essentially.
Wait a minute. I understand what it is you're saying. I apologize for cutting you off, but what I'm saying is, the Catholic Church lawsuit is against the Obama administration for their mandate, right? That was a big story. But here's the thing that I found interesting. They didn't cover the Catholic Church lawsuit against the federal government. But what they did cover was the arrest of Pope Benedict's butler.
Well,
that was, I mean,
you make a very good point. You make a very good point.
Okay.
I would, however, disagree with you about the coverage of the Obama mandate. I did see a lot of it in the New York metropolitan area. I heard about it on my stations, my news stations that I listen to on a regular basis when it broke about a week or so ago. I heard a lot of it. I heard a lot of it.
You're absolutely right. That was why I literally left it when I asked the question. I was talking about the major networks, as you mentioned, ABC, NBC, and CBS. Their nightly news program, they didn't cover it, but they covered the butler's arrest. Here's the second.
The butler's arrest is a salacious story. You know, listen, human nature is pulled toward the titillating and the salacious.
Why do we
focus on things? You know, Kim Kardashian is now dating Kanye West when there are still men and women dying in Afghanistan. I mean, you know, if you weigh those two together, clearly the story is Afghanistan. But, you know, there's somebody, an editor and a news director, who sit in a meeting with the rest of the news. You know, listen, I could tell you a quick story along this line, and we can continue because I know you have some more questions.
Sure.
But I had a reporter friend of mine in New York City who, during the Iraq war, had come across an Iraq veteran who had come back to the United States. He was shunned by the VA. He was pushed aside. And she went to her news director and said, hey, look, this is a great story about a local person who fought, lost limbs in Iraq, came back, and now is being ignored. And the news director actually said to her, you know what, let's not do that story. People might get depressed and switch the station.
Wow.
Now, when she told me this, I was shocked. But the thinking is, and we'll go back a little bit from earlier, it is a business. And, you know, they're not going to cover every story. I don't know if you can look too deeply into it, why they're not covering. Covering a story has, especially on TV where there's more resources that are needed, is often a combination of manpower, money, location, interest. There are 4 or 5 or 6 or 10 categories to go into it. And sometimes it just doesn't make the newscast. I don't know if it's deliberate. I would think that it would not be, and I'm going to err on that side.
Okay, fair enough. Scott Walker was a big story this past week, of course, because of the recall, election, which, of course, he won by 7 points.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Walker, the day after the recall, received a startling amount of death threats after the fact by the opposition.
Mm-hmm.
Not one report. In fact, the only reports have been on not just conservative media as far as blogs are concerned, but it's been alternative media have been the only people who have covered this. This is a salacious story about death threats.
Yes.
Any opinion as to why that wouldn't be covered?
Well, the only thing I could say with regard to that story is, just being in some of these editorial meetings, is there's a crescendo that builds up to the story. And the story is, how will this vote go? The deeper implications are the Republicans and their policies better than the Democrats and unionized labor? So it's a conflict. The news loves conflict. And Walker won. And at that point, in the eyes of many news directors, the story is over. Anything that happens beyond that is probably not as interesting as the actual vote. And that was the climax of this story. So
I have to stop you there, Frank, because here's the reason why I have to disagree with you there. I don't want to turn it into an argument, of course.
No,
but
I understand.
I have to dispute this, because here's what I'm saying. According to the news media, if you looked at every one of them, every major network, in fact, there's a video that I can play that was on Breitbart that shows there was a video that I guess the RNC put out where they took a tidbit of every news broadcast who reported the Scott Walker recall election, talking about how it was one of the most important political elections of our times that could spell either certain doom for Romney or Obama on how this played out. In other words, they were saying that it had national implications.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they covered this extensively. Everyone did, because the momentum looked very clear that Scott Walker was going to be recalled. I'm not going to suggest who it was that was interested in having it done, but those, you know, we leave that to MSNBC. But the bottom line was that these people were talking about how important this race was, how important this recall was. The minute that he won, you would think, after calling it one of the most important elections, how the tensions were so high, that the opposition, after he won, would suggest that he be killed. Mm-hmm. A reactionary story to what they considered the one of the most important elections leading up to the presidential election. Why they would then say the story is over? The story's not over.
Well, you know, receiving the governor receiving death threats is sadly a reflection on our political discourse in this day and age, where it's more of a team sport. We win, you lose, and there's very little compromise. Is it a barometer or a bellwether for what might happen in Wisconsin or maybe in the national election in this coming presidential year? Probably. But I think you're looking too deeply into it, because it might have been a situation in which all the reporters that were there, except for the local reporters, had to return back to their networks and do some other story. And it's not that the story might have been missed. You heard about it. It was on alternative media. It was on the internet. Maybe the networks didn't cover it. Yes, he got death threats. Is that sort of a story important enough to reach the level of a national follow-up on it? I don't know. Yeah, you know, governors, I'm sure, get death threats all the time. Maybe not in that volume,
right.
But governors and politicians get death threats often.
What's your view of alternative media being in the mainstream?
Listen, I like it. I'm not one of these stogie old TV or radio guys, and we did it this way, and this is the only way to do it. As I mentioned, it's important that you have journalistic integrity and do it correctly and make sure that the facts are there and are accurate and everything is – all the T's are crossed and all the I's are dotted. So I like the fact that there are more people out there reporting things, seeing things. And I think that in shortly, and maybe in 10 or 15 years or sooner – everything will go into the internet, and everyone will have an opinion. And this widening of discourse, instead of somebody up on a hill saying on a big white mountain saying, "Hey, this is going to be tonight's news," is helpful. You might have there might come a day where you'll pick and choose your newscast. You'll sit down and go on your TV, which will now be converged with a computer. And that's already happening, and say, I want the story on Syria. I want to see what the president did today. I want to see what my local baseball team did today. Put together this newscast for me and just play it over the next 20 minutes. That day's coming.
Somewhat of a favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, Mary.
Do you believe that the alternative media is keeping the mainstream media honest? And the reason why I asked that was the story like the altered Zimmerman 911 call that NBC had to react to because of alternative media.
Well, that's a very interesting question. Is alternative media keeping the mainstream media honest? No. I think that in that particular story, I think it was a case of someone who did not know what they were doing. I mean, we know as journalists, and I go back to my foundation and my college years of learning this business and working in it and working at the feet of really some great news people, I would know as a news person never to edit something like that because it was much too important and it might alter the perception of it, which is exactly what happened. So I just think it might have been a case of inexperience by somebody in the newsroom thinking this was the way I had to do it, and not really doing it deliberately. I'd like to think it was that way. If it was deliberate, then that person should be fired, and the news director should be fired if he or she knew that was going on.
Well, two people were indeed fired for it, but the reason why I asked, because that happened at NBC. In fact, it happened on the national level. The Today Show producer was fired, and a local Florida NBC producer was fired for it. But the reason why I bring that up is that Matt Gutman, the ABC reporter who was covering the George Zimmerman Trayvon Martin case, he actually tweeted on March 13th that George Zimmerman killed Trayvon Martin because he was black in reporting the news to his audience on Twitter, which is, again, I believe that part of that was a narrative. This was what I considered one of the most recent things where alternative media really, really – directed their attack at mainstream media for not being honest, and it sort of made them be honest. I think that's why I believe personally why it's a good thing.
Yeah, listen, I would agree with you. I think more eyeballs and more information is always better than less. And in this particular case, and we've seen it over the years, bloggers, look at the Congressman Anthony Weiner case.
Right.
I mean, that was broken by a blogger, in this case Breitbart, if memory serves correctly.
Yes, it was. It was Breitbart.
And exactly. And the congressman denies it, and he denies it, and then finally he's caught. But there was a time when you would look at the National Enquirer and we would giggle because we thought it was an idiotic newspaper. And over the years, they have broken some stories as well, including the fact that John Edwards had an illegitimate child. It goes back to what I was saying. More people out there reporting, seeing, blogging, tweeting is good. It's good it's good for the political discourse, and it's good for information. Information is always good. That's my feeling. even though some of it might be garbage or inaccurate, the more the better.
All right, we're on the phone with the media expert and author of It Shocked Even Us and More Crazy Stories Covering Local News, Frank Cipolla. Final question.
Yes.
And this was a tough one. Because I almost feel like I know you now, and I have a strange feeling that I know what you're going to answer.
We're both from New York. New Yorkers understand each other.
Okay. Do you believe, as a journalist, that you've been here, and I'm sure you've covered everything, do you believe that President Barack Obama was vetted in 2008 and all the screaming and hollering about vetting him is disingenuous? Do you believe it's overblown? Do you believe that it's true? Do you believe there's some of it that's true? What's your take on that?
Well, you have to explain that further. I don't know exactly what you're referring to. Was he vetted? Are you referring to the birthers, or what are you referring to?
No. Well, I'll go beyond the birthers. Let's go into this. Well, it's been hundreds of things have been reported, even today. In 2008, Barack Obama launched a website for his campaign. It was called Fight the Smears. Part of it was in June of 2008, there was a story that said that Barack Obama was a member of a socialist group called the New Party. It was released today. The documents was received by the New Party. He indeed was a member in 1997. And it turns out that everything that the campaign said, even David Axelrod, for that matter, had lied. That's one. Two, in 1991, when he wrote his book, Dreams from My Father, it was placed in his bio, Barack Obama, born in Kenya, raised in Indonesia and Hawaii. They responded by saying that the publicity agency or the literary agency said that that was a mistake made by one of the literary agents. But then it was then found out that the people who write their books write their own biography. So it turns out that Barack Obama did indeed write his own biography. It wasn't a mistake made by some literary agent or some literary bio writer. There were other stories about Barack Obama's association with Bill Ayers. He only hung out with him when he was in high school. It turns out that he was actually at Bill Ayers' house in 2005 for a 4th of July party. So there, when I say vetted, these are things that, look, the Washington Post wrote a 5,500-word essay on Mitt Romney and an alleged hazing scheme that took place when he was in high school almost 50 years ago. And Barack Obama's story about his weed smoking appears in the same newspaper and is placed on page 6. Romney's story, above the fold in the Washington Post, page 6 story on Barack Obama's heavy drug use. Do you believe that he was vetted with just that limited information that I gave? Do you believe that he was vetted? But it's 2008. He's already been president over 3.5 years.
Well, here's what I do believe. I think we're in the political presidential season where everything is going to come out, whether it's false or accurate, and you're going to see stories about this, whether they're frivolous or really important. You know, I think the thing to remember is, what are the facts? I hear the birthers. They talk about this stuff. I also see the full form, the lengthy form of his birth certificate in Hawaii in 1961. I see that. You know, for me, as a journalist, what do the facts say? Here's the birth certificate. The president was born in Hawaii. Hawaii became a state in 1960, early 1960. Therefore, he's born in the United States. That's good enough for me. This other stuff, I don't know. There's a lot of information out there. Was he properly vetted? You would ask the question, vetted by whom?
Well, by the media. I mean, if the media could do a story about a 50-year-old Mitt Romney story and an alleged hazing incident that took place from a guy who's dead now –
yeah, well, listen, I would concur that would be more frivolous. I mean, what that has to do with this man at this time in his life as a presidential candidate is a bit puzzling to me. Why they would spend 5,500 words explaining this story, I don't know. But,
right.
You know, it probably goes back to what we discussed earlier in this hour. Are there some newspapers, are there some networks, are there some local stations that have a political bent or agenda? Most certainly. And I think you have to take that with a grain of salt. I can't answer the vetted question on Obama. As far as in my mind, he's the president, duly elected, fairly elected, citizen of the United States. Okay. You know, beyond that, unless I see proof otherwise, that's all I need to know.
Well, let me ask you this, and I'll let you go, Frank. Do you believe that journalists like yourself, who try to keep it literally straight down the middle, just report the story, forget about the angle, just report the story. Do you believe in, as you suggested before, as Storm Field said, as you just spoke about, that there's no more infotainment, it's just tainment. Do you believe that that's taking so much control over our news media that guys like you and I might get pushed out of the fold, or will we have to assimilate? So to speak, will we have to step up our game?
Well, as long as there are radio shows like this, as long as there are blogs, you know, there will always be room for good journalists. To answer your question, yes, sadly, I've seen it on local TV stations in which the news often becomes a promotional vehicle for shows upcoming. How many newscasts have you seen locally that start with a story about something and somehow, in some way, shape, or form, try to tie it into a show that's on their same network, whether it be Dancing with the Stars or, you see, you know, whatever they are. You know, I don't even watch them, but I know that there's these shows, both reality and otherwise, and these stations promote them. There's a great story in the book that I talk about. It shocked even us, and by the way, it's $20. It's a wonderful summer read. It's hilarious, especially if you grew up in New York. But there's a story in the book that I was sitting in a newsroom one day, and we had an editorial meeting, and the news director said to me, okay, what is our lead-in tonight? And they said, well, our lead-in tonight is WWE wrestling, you know, professional wrestling.
Are you serious?
Or entertainment wrestling.
Right.
And he actually looked at one of the reporters and said, okay, all right, we're starting off with this story on Iraq. Try to go down to the WWE store in Times Square. I think Hulk Hogan's going to be there tonight. Ask him about this story. And I repulsed, because what we were trying to do was we were trying to fit the lead in into the story instead of just reporting the news. And I really talk about that in the very first chapter of the book.
I have to read this book, Frank.
Yeah.
I have to.
I talk about that in the first chapter of the book because that's where the name came from. It shocked even us, was something that an anchor said on the air in reference to a story that meant nothing, and it just so struck me. And again, the best way to get this book is to go on my website and not on Amazon, because it's cheaper on my website. You could buy it by mail, you can buy it by credit card, you can phone in an order, you could buy it as an e-book. Or you go to my Amazon page, my personal Amazon page, and order it there. It's $20. I'll sign it for you, mail it out to you. If you grew up in New York or you grew up anywhere and you watched and loved local news, this is the book for you.
Okay. That's Frank Cipolla, the author of It Shocked Even Us and More Crazy Stories Covering the Local News, and as a media expert. Thank you for your time. I appreciate you coming on. And dealing with some of those ridiculous questions that I have.
Hey, Reese, I've done dozens of interviews in the promotion of this book. I have really, really enjoyed this hour. You're a very good interviewer. I want to thank you and Mary as well for having me on.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you being on, man. I hope to have you back. How's the book doing so far? Pretty well?
It's doing very well, and it's very, very popular with those in the industry. And they actually love it, because I did the Alan Combs radio show not too long ago, and we were talking on the air, and he said, Frank, this is my story. I mean, every reporter started at that small station and then went to a bigger station and ran into all these crazy people along the way and all these funny stories. I've had reporters come to me and say, Frank, this is my story. I just happened to put it down on paper. It's 30 years of funny stories that I've experienced, and every other radio and TV news person has as well.
Are you friends with Alan?
Oh, yes. Alan and I go back 30 years. There's a photograph of he and I in the book. In fact, I was an intern at WPIX Radio in New York in 1978, and Alan was a disc jockey there.
Well, can you send Alan a personal message for me?
Okay.
Tell him I said, nah, 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 nah. He'll know what I mean. All right.
Thank you, Reese.
Frank Cipolla, thank you again.
I appreciate it. It's been a pleasure.
Man.
Have me on whenever you want again. I'm here for you.
Thank you, sir. I hope you do come back on. Frank Cipolla, the author of the very informative book. It shocked even us, and more crazy stories covering local news. And we'll be back. Stick around.
Trying a brand new menu item at McDonald's isn't risky. You know what's risky? Petting a stray pit bull or shaving your head just to see how it would look. That's risky. Naming your son Sue, super risky. Giving your friends your Facebook password, ultra risky. So trying a new menu item at McDonald's is about a zero on the old risker scale.
Try a snack size of our new Chicken McBites for free with purchase of any extra value meal from January 30th through February 5th.
New at McDonald's means no risk, delicious reward.
Participation may vary.
I tried a lot of cars, Ford Pinto, the Pontiac Fiero, but the Volt was the first car that truly got me excited and looking into the prospect of buying American again. Yeah, I've heard they're catching on fire in some cases, but I found that the fire really helps me get to my destination faster for fear of my life. Also, people really move out of the way when giant hunks of metal are hurtling towards them. Probably the one thing that sold me on the car. I'm really proud of what GM has been able to accomplish by working with the Obama administration. They've proven that in America, you can make it in any business, as long as you have unlimited financial resources and the backing of the United States government. I don't know about you, but I think that's more than worth the couple hundred thousand dollars it costs taxpayers every time somebody buys one of these suckers. I'm sorry, do you smell something?
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the radio, and I know you've got an opinion, so give yours. The number is 347-308-8701. 347-308-8701, right here on Reese on the radio. On the radio, and we are back. 4 minutes till the top of the hour. So he wouldn't budge.
Well, that was a great interview.
Really?
Yeah, it was. It was an awesome interview.
I thought he was really, really good. Pretty informative too.
He was very, very nice.
Yeah.
He was a very nice guy.
I thought he was nice, and he's from Monaco.
He wouldn't take that chunk of codfish you were throwing out there.
I appreciated his political correctness.
You did?
I did. I appreciated
you
it.
Did you think any question I asked was debatable?
No. After the first time you tried to debate him and he didn't take it, I knew from that point on he would never bite it. I knew.
Man, and you threw that chum out there like it was something and not one shark bite.
Yeah, I know, not one shark bite.
You chummed that water pretty well.
But I appreciated that. I really appreciate.
Yeah, but you know what I noticed about him? You know what I noticed about him? He did do one thing that was very obvious, and I was gonna call him on it, but I said I can't have no proof of this. He had a plausible deniability about things. You know what I mean? He had this sort of like he hadn't really heard that story before, sort of reaction. Like the George Zimmerman thing, he didn't bite there.
I don't agree with that statement.
Well, no. Bottom line. He don't like to discuss it. But you know, I'm willing to bet. He's a liberal.
Oh, come on.
Well, you know what? Whether he's a liberal or he's a conservative, it doesn't even matter.
Yeah, but you know what? He honestly expressed. This is what I like. He honestly expressed his disdain a certain way in news broadcasting, and that was clear.
What makes it about them?
Say again.
How a newscaster makes the story about them as opposed to the story.
Exactly. I got to give a big shout out to my folks over at the Real Talk Blanchers who have been holding me, holding
shout
out.
Shout out to Blanchers, yeah.
Talking about they're not going to get on, we're not going to have them on the show, or we're not going to be on the show another speaks. Knock it off. Let's make this happen next week. I got plenty of topics to get into.
No, remember the ball's in their court. We gave them the ball to choose on a debate or discussion.
Get on the microphone. Come on, let us know. What's up? You going to do something next week or what?
Oh, Reed.
What?
Oh, God.
Okay. Oh.
Come on. If you don't do it for anybody else, please do it for me, because I need it.
See, we love it.
Oh, you need it, man. Man, you're the worst one. You're worse than Reed sometimes.
Wait.
No. That's the monster he created.
How am I the worst one?
You're tough. That's the monster he created.
We have got make it happen. You and JC, work it out. Make this happen. Let's get together next week, and let's really, really get something popping. I got plenty of stuff to talk about. I want you guys to defend it. I got evidence,
okay.
I got audio, I got it all.
Okay. We look at next Wednesday. We look at next Wednesday.
And you know, I'm glad you said that, because I was just going to suggest let's do next hump day.
Next hump day.
And
it's
that's
the perfect time.
In this joint.
Yes, ma'am. Right. Yes, ma'am. That's
right.
The deal. Next Wednesday, the Real Talk Lancers versus the Reese. We'll be here.
A digital radio puff pass.
All right, guys. See you tomorrow. We want to thank Frank Cipolla for being our guest, of course, on the show. Real Talk Lancers next week, Wednesday. We're going to have it out. We're going to duke it out. Round 3, baby. Round 3. We'll see you guys tomorrow. It's Reese on the Radio.
Peace.